HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan, announcing show number 181, recorded live Thursday, September 24th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of controls for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks about Mono with Joseph Hill and Scott Belware.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. This is a Mono episode of Hansel Minutes, and I've got two interesting people on today. We've got Joseph Hill, product manager for Mono. Thanks for coming on, Joseph.
Thank you.
And we've got the legendary Scott Belware, an internationally known .NET and Ruby dandy and bon vivant. How are you, Scott Belware?
I'm very good. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for helping me organize this, Scott. I really appreciate it. You've got a conference coming up focusing on Mono called Monospace. Where can people learn about that other than on the search engines?
Well, the website is monospace.us, and we have a Twitter feed and a blog feed as well, where we're slowly leaking some news as things go on.
Okay.
I guess most people are talking about Monospace on the social networks, so that would probably be the best place to sort of keep an ear to the ground.
And when is the conference?
Conference is October 27th, which is a Tuesday, through October 30th, a Friday, which is the day before Halloween.
Okay, and is the conference focused entirely on Mono?
The significant focus, I would say the majority of the focus, is Mono. But this is really a conference in parts. The first part is 2 days of in-depth tutorials or immersive tutorials, and the second 2 days are an open space format or an open format, much like the way we did KaizenConf in Austin last year, and I think the Seattle Alt.NET conference did a little bit of the same thing last spring as well. The idea is to spend 2 days learning new things, really sort of going deep on things that you haven't had a chance to get exposure to before. And the following 2 days, you can spend time sort of honing that understanding or drilling that understanding in by using the open space format to do that. But the open space format also allows for anything. So I expect the participants to put any subject they want into the schedule, and that can most definitely leave the subject area of Mono. So I expect that we'll talk about open source on .NET broadly, inclusive of Mono and inclusive of MSPL. We also have some MSPL content in the tutorial track as well. I know that Glenn Block, more than likely or possibly, I'm not sure what the likelihood is at this point, he's working it out, would come and do a talk on the managed extensibility framework. And I think he might actually even do that on a Linux distro to show the Mono guys some of the developments that are going on from the Microsoft side in open source and MSPL that can benefit and have an effect on Mono development. So I'm hoping that this really, this conference, like the conferences of the previous 2 years, are going to be an opportunity to both learn new things and to cross-pollinate ideas and make, both broader and deeper knowledge for the betterment of our understanding of software development and app development on .NET and CLR and Mono by extension.
So for people who aren't familiar and for our non-native English-speaking listeners, when you're saying, the word you're saying MSPL is MSPL, Microsoft Permissive License, which is Microsoft's very simple and fairly liberal open source license. So when we say MSPL, we're talking about open source software from Microsoft. Right. So you're focusing on Mono at the conference, but also on, you're anticipating some MSPL, some Microsoft open source topics as well. Like you said, MEF, the managed extensibility framework.
I guess that was a little bit of a digression into jargon. When I said MSPL, I guess I was referring to some of the open source development, some of the open source frameworks on the development side and the dev stack that are built by Microsoft. So Microsoft Extensibility Framework is an MSPL MSPL product, and AFP MVC is MSPL as well. It's an official open source license as per the what is that body? The OSI?
Yeah, open source. Is it OSI, Open Source Initiative? It's the people that recognize whether something's really open source, Joseph?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Let me take it this direction, though. Why would I care about Mono, Joseph? I'm a .NET programmer, and I do all my work in the Microsoft CLR. Why would I want to go to this conference, and why would I want to start using Mono other than to try something different, as Scott said?
Oh, that opens a whole big can of worms. So the short version traditionally is that, well, you have these .NET skills, and you don't want them to be tied exclusively to Microsoft's platforms. So that's one common answer, and I think we can probably delve into that pretty deeply. And then, you know, some of the other answers on the side are that we do a lot of .NET development off of Windows, and a lot of that can be extremely relevant to .NET developers. So we've developed a lot of libraries that are fully managed that developers can take advantage of in Windows, and some of those are being adopted, like the Mono.addins framework we have, which, you know, has some overlap with MEF that Bellware was mentioning earlier, but provides some separate functionality as well. We have our Mono develop IDE, which is Visual Studio like. Visual Studio developers would be very comfortable in it, but it actually runs very well on Linux, Windows, and Mac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, it's a, you know, like Scott said, it's a broadening of knowledge. There's a lot to be learned from the cross pollination there.
Wouldn't you say that kind of historically, of course, in the internet is maybe the last few months or the last year or two, but historically that Mono development hasn't exactly been easy for the person who lives inside of Visual Studio, for the Windows Visual Studio person? They're going to spend a little more time at the command line or a little more time in an IDE that maybe isn't Visual Studio?
This is extremely true. Yeah, this is.
I mean, Mono is not exactly a slam dunk, is what I'm saying. I mean, it's very exciting and powerful, but from a tooling perspective, it's not incredibly easy.
Well, like you said, historical and internet terms. I mean, when I got into it, which was, you know, 2003, it was, okay, first download the Mono sources and spend a few days figuring out how to build that and then bootstrap up from there. In the past year or two, we've gotten a lot closer to, I mean, at least if you go to the Mono website, you can get a virtual machine or live CD that has everything pre-configured, so that in the simplest case, particularly like if you take an ASP.NET website, you could publish your ASP.NET website to a Linux server from directly within Visual Studio as is. Mm-hmm. So the story has gotten a lot better. But yeah, I mean, there's always a level of comfort that people, you know, have to figure out if they're willing to come up to. Now, that said, I think it's a good segue into, you know, part of what we've been focused on doing within the Mono team in the past year, which is to really improve the story for the Visual Studio developers. And, you know, we have some tools for Visual Studio that are currently in preview form, and we'll be, you know, we're opening it up more and more. We'll be launching it actually very soon because they're starting to become quite complete. But what we've done there is created an add-in for Visual Studio that tries to remove that last layer of complexity that you refer to, so that, you know, really it is truly as simple as, okay, build this, run it in Mono, you know, run it remotely on a Linux server in Mono, and ultimately be able to remotely debug from within Visual Studio directly to a Mono application running on a Linux box.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we're calling colloquially Mono VS. Is that kind of the code name we'll call it for now?
Yeah, that's, you know, Mono VS. If you wanted to see about it on Twitter, you'd be looking for the, you know, #MonoVS hashtag.
Okay.
So that's the short form. There's still some debate on the final name. It's, you know, Mono VS is growing on me, so it could just be that.
Mm-hmm. And this plugs into Visual Studio as a native add-in. It's a Windows add-in. It's custom to Visual Studio. And is it an add-in that's, like, what is it doing? Is it shelling out? I mean, how does this thing making Mono feel as convenient as doing regular .NET development?
So it's a normal add-in. If you've ever installed an add-in into Visual Studio, you're probably familiar with the term. I mean, it's, you know, you say something's an add-in, it has a specific connotation, and mm-hmm. That's what this is. And in fact, you know, Novell joined the Visual Studio Industry Partners program so that we could, you know, really get hooked into the Visual Studio ecosystem. As I've heard it referenced a few places, you know, what it comes down to is is making Visual Studio developers as comfortable as they can be in their native environment, because Visual Studio is an integrated development environment, and mm-hmm. developers expect an integrated development experience. And so that is what it tries to provide. We add the menus to the menu bar and context menus where they make sense. And it tries to achieve a couple of goals. I mean, we want to expose the features the developers believe they need directly within Visual Studio. But beyond that, we're trying to guide developers through the process of getting an application running on Mono. So each of the features are you can get to them where they make sense. But beyond that, we've arranged everything so that if you didn't know where to get started before, you'll know exactly where to jump in now. So there's a list of features, and it starts with the Mono Migration Analyzer, which prior to the Visual Studio tools has been a tool that we host on the website that's just a standalone WinForms app today. But we've integrated that in Visual Studio so that what you can do is you can say, analyze my application that I'm developing here. And it will compare everything you're calling in .NET to everything that's available in Mono and give you warnings, just like you would expect, other warnings to show up in Visual Studio, where you can double-click and say, go to this call. And if you're calling a method that doesn't exist in Mono yet, then you'll be able to correct it right there. Or if you're dependent on native libraries and you're doing pinvokes, you'll get warnings that say, hey, you need to be aware of this method may not exist on your target platform, so you can address it.
How often does that happen? I mean, I think that's a real question that people want to understand about Mono, is that, so you used to use the term pinvoke, right? And this means calling into a native library. So for example, I can't be on Linux running a .NET application under Mono and then say, I want to call into, something in kernel32.dll. I can't touch the operating system, and that's what a virtual machine is for. But I think what people wonder is, if they're thinking about going to Mono, they're afraid that they might start moving there and then discover that there's some whole section or some whole API that they just don't have access to. It doesn't even exist. What's the surface area like?
Yeah, well, so that's the great thing about MoMA. I mean, the Mono Migration Analyzer is you can take that and point it at a compiled app and quickly start to answer those questions and begin breaking down the problem. So first, to speak to surface area, aside from kernel 32, we'll get into that in a moment, but the first question is really whether or not the method that you're calling, even if it's a .NET method, does it exist in Mono? I mean, clearly we lag because we follow the implementation as they're released. We don't generally try to get too far out ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. So we're missing things like big parts of the .NET 3.0 APIs. So you're not going to have WCF or workflow or WPF. And in .NET 3.5, we're just wrapping up our link to SQL implementation. Beyond that, the surface area doesn't look so bad. We actually have a pretty complete story. If you're doing ASP.NET, our ASP.NET story's been complete for quite a while, and ASP.NET Ajax has ran quite well. Thank you for that being MSPL. Same story with ASP.NET MVC. We supported that on the day it was released.
Really? So it just took a couple of hours for you to get MVC to work on Mono?
So actually what happened is, for a while we didn't know what the license was, so we just sort of stayed away from it. And then as it got close to the final release, the binaries removed. There had previously been a restriction in the license that said you can't run these binaries off of Windows. And when that license restriction was removed, in the lead up to the final MVC release, we started testing against the binaries. And then luckily when the final release happened and it was MSPL'd, we were ready to hit the ground running.
Very cool. Now, Scott, how much time have you spent with Mono personally? Because you're hosting a Mono space conference, an open space conference based on Mono, but how much time have you spent with it? Have you been using the MoMA analyzer and MonoVS at all?
I haven't been using MoMA because I'm not really porting anything from my .NET work into Mono.
Mm-hmm.
The bulk of my work in Mono hasn't really been too terribly... what's the word? It's an X word, not extenuous, but...
Sophisticated?
I haven't done a whole heck of a lot with it yet. I have Mono develop on my MacBook, And I've been working with it, working on a website built mm-hmm. on Mono, or helping a friend with a website working on Mono. And you know, it's just like working pretty much from my perspective as a developer. The experience is pretty much just like everything else I've done in .NET, building web forms applications. So I'm not really sure that there's a whole lot to say about it beyond its, you know, .NET development. The reason I'm hosting Monospace, or, you know, the reason why, you know, I hosted why I've hosted conferences for the last 2 years, and this will be the mm-hmm. third year in Austin, is that for me, it's a really great way to concoct a circumstance where I can be around people that have things that I want to learn. So Mono is more for me something that I really want to understand more. I really want to understand more of the possibilities of running .NET on platforms that are not only Windows. One of those, you know, as a great example would be iPhone. I'm hosting the conference not because I'm an expert, but because I want to have some time with some experts.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. So I think this brings up an interesting point as well, and I'd be interested in what both of you have to think about this. So people might be listening to this, and they might say, wow, Scott just asked Other Scott. You're now Other Scott, by the way. Hanselman just asked Bellware, tell me about your expertise in Mono, and here you are saying, well, you know, I'm not much of an expert. I'm organizing this conference because I want to talk to experts. I think that's a really an interesting way to talk about community, because so often we have this sense of, and I mentioned this before on a webcast, that authorship equals authority. And here you are, a proclaimed not expert in Mono, but you have put together a Mono conference. And this is kind of the new generation of community, isn't it? That, you know, why should you have to be an expert if you're going to have an open spaces conference? You want to bring people in. This isn't a conference where Bellware talks to us about Mono, right? You're in this case, the catalyst.
I'm not teaching at this conference. I'm not presenting at this conference. I'll certainly share any knowledge that I have with people at the open space, if they want it, and if it's appropriate. But this is a conference this is really selfish from my perspective. I like to spend some time sitting at the feet of masters and being a student and learning something that just is way outside of my current knowledge set. And this is just a way to do that. And I think a lot of people organizing regional conferences in .NET probably get the same kick out of it. I can't imagine that the guys organizing, the conference, I can't remember the name of it, the conference in Tennessee, that's becoming quite popular, and the one up in the Great Plains one, not the Great Plains, but the Great Lakes one. I mean, I'm pretty sure those guys are the same mentality, where it's just a great chance to provide a space where you can be near the people who you want to be your teachers.
Yeah, definitely.
And of course, when we shape, because that's my goal, when I shape conferences like this, I'm specifically creating a conference that's structured for teaching and learning and interaction with experts, rather than a conference that's geared at more commercial imperatives. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't really have, obviously this will promote Mono, and it'll promote some of the Microsoft MSPL products, and it'll promote open source. And the CodePlex guys are coming down to talk, engage the community about open source. But really, this is about getting an opportunity to be in a conference style that is completely built from the ground up in its DNA to be about learning and teaching.
Hey, everybody, this is Scott coming at you from another place and time. No doubt you probably bump into testing tasks now and then in your work. And you know, writing functional tests is probably not your favorite thing. It's kind of difficult, takes time, and the results can be dubious. Well, get ready to start liking tests, thanks to Telerik, with the new WebEye testing framework. Building web automation tests is a breeze. You've got code automation with advanced ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight applications. You can write a single test, have it executed against multiple browsers at once. You benefit from a rich API. There's link support, integration with Visual Studio unit testing, also NUnit, XUnit, and MBUnit. Not to mention the free wrappers for Telerik RAD controls for ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight, all shipping with Telerik's new testing tool. One of the best features, the WebEye testing framework, which is developed by Art of Test, is it's absolutely free. If you've already got hooked on WebEye testing framework, start using it right away. Go to Telerik.com for more info. Thanks a lot. Now, Joseph, the Codeplex Foundation has started up here, and you guys are involved, or Miguel's involved at least. There's this relationship between Microsoft and Mono that I think is great, and but I work for Microsoft, so you can't trust me really to say anything, I suppose. It seems like Novell and Mono have getting a lot of hassle from the open source guys lately. If you see on Miguel's blog, he's getting a lot of people just not being very pleasant about the relationship that you guys have with Microsoft. I, as a Microsoft guy inside, I feel like we're really trying to change things and include a lot more open source in what we're doing. We're pushing it every chance we can to open source things. What does it feel like from the other side of the evil partnership on the Novell side?
Well, from our perspective, I really believe in what Miguel says, which is, he's going to focus on the possibilities. It's too much of open source is an us versus them mentality. And I think the actions that Miguel has consistently taken have been where I can make people more open, and Microsoft in particular, that benefits everybody. And that's much better for the community and users and developers than trying to draw a line in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's interesting is Miguel has taken a lot of flack, and I'm sure it's probably taken its toll on him. There's a lot of personal attacks.
Right. Well, people are saying he's not really a member of the open source community because he's in bed with Microsoft.
Yeah, certainly some people are. But, what really surprised me as I went through and looked at, he had a recent blog post that, held out the palm, for peace there, peace offering, if you will. And, there were very limited attacks, actually, I think, coming back at him versus, a lot of people that said, wow, I really get what you're doing. And I think it's great that that Microsoft's clearly becoming more open. And I think Miguel deserves a lot of credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
So from our perspective, and of course, particularly with my background, I was a .NET developer before I joined Novell. I've always believed that this potential lies there, and there's potential in Microsoft as a great software company, and there's potential in the .NET framework being available to all developers, and this is definitely furthering some good goals.
Do you think that this is competition? I mean, is Mono just flat out competition, or is it filling? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure clearly there's a lot of competition. We would love to win over some .NET developers, but it's about finding where we have mutual interests and mm-hmm. Growing the pie, as they say. When we make the platform better, we both win.
And do you think that's the case, Scott?
Well, I don't personally. I've always been aggravated, I think, a little bit by a number of folks in Microsoft. Certainly not everybody, who sort of subconsciously or preconsciously feel that the word competition is necessarily a negative. And I see it as very much a neutral force. It can either lead to bad outcomes or good outcomes. And I tend to see competition naturally as something that's really great, because it gets people. It blows out the dust out of the pipes. It gets the lethargy out of the way. It gets people thinking, and it gets companies innovating, and it gets productivity improved, and makes us call into question our firmest beliefs and come up with the next generation of beliefs. So yeah, I think it's absolutely competitive. But my definition of competition is 100% positive. I mean, it's just kind of like saying, yeah, it increases profit or it increases opportunity. It's productivity and competition go hand in hand.
So it's just a given. It's just, of course. So clearly, in your mind, the world would be a lesser place without the Mono option.
The world is a lesser place without diversity of any kind.
Wow, you should put that on a t-shirt, Scott. That was beautiful. Did you just come up with that?
No, but, you know,
I just had a tear just right down my face.
I'm a firm believer in the value of diversity, and I believe in diversity because every time I come face to face with diversity in my life, it's very challenging and it's often painful. And I know when I come, you know, face to face with those experiences that, you know, that experience is showing me at a place in my life where it's time to stretch out and grow. And that's part of what competition does. It does increase the diversity, and through diversity, we both broaden and deeper our ability.
Well, speaking of competition, and as if it wasn't confusing enough for the average Joe out there, really, if you're coding C# or VB, you're in a good position right now because you can create a whole diverse series of applications. Joseph, can you talk a little bit about Mono Touch and what that means to the average Windows C# and VB developer out there?
Oh, of course, I'd love to talk about Mono Touch. This has been really dominating a lot of my life for the past several months, and then particularly, you know, in the past 2 weeks, you know, since we launched the Mono Touch product. Mm-hmm. So Mono Touch is, you know, for those who don't know, it's Mono for the iPhone. And, you know, that's, I think, you know, I hate to use a cliche, but I mean, it's sort of game changing. You know, there's the iPhone itself being referenced as that quite often. The iPhone development platform prior to Mono Touch was essentially Xcode and Objective-C. Mm-hmm. And yeah, with Mono Touch, what we did is we've opened up the platform to .NET developers, and of course this is attractive to people who are really attached to C#, and you know, they want to use those skills to develop iPhone apps. But it's even been very attractive to people who've already bit the bullet and learned Objective-C, just because you know, C# and Mono offer some advantages. You know, over the current tool set that's available.
So apparently it's reasonably easy to make an iPhone application, even though you're using Objective-C, because there's a whole, you know, there's an app for that. Whatever there's an app for that. What is the benefit of me writing the application in a .NET platform?
Well, there's a few. I mean, one is of course, it's .NET is comfortable for many people, but I mean, like you said, if you already have bit the Objective-C bullet, it's really are you comfortable with the syntax? And you know, we bring C#3 to the iPhone, so you know, when I say the syntax, I mean, you know, you get
really like link.
Link, yep. We have linked XML. You know, for several examples published on the site already, and you know. Everything else below that depends on. So, you know, you get your lambdas and your generics, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We also have garbage collection. You don't have that in Objective-C on the iPhone.
Wow. And now I understand, though, that you don't have the ability to do what we call jitting, just-in-time compilation on an iPhone. That's something that is, it's not that it's technically impossible, but it's explicitly called out that you can't do kind of code generation and just-in-time interpretation on an iPhone. So how did you get around that since .NET bytecode works the way that it does?
Right. So it is a license restriction. It's also a technical restriction. The kernel enforces it.
Oh, the kernel enforces it. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess what it comes down to is that, you know, you can generate code, but you can't execute it because you can't change, you know, you're not allowed to change the memory that you write to be executable. So wow. This limits a lot of languages and virtual machines from being able to be, you know, put on the iPhone. The way we get around it is Mono has a feature which is a full ahead of time compilation. This would be similar to Engine in .NET, except Engine isn't really full ahead of time compilation. But in the case of Mono, we can actually take a .NET executable and compile the whole thing down to a native executable. And so that just means that, you know, basically every path that could be jitted, we jit in advance. Now there's a couple of features that means you're not going to have access to, such as reflection emit, clearly, or anything that depends on that. But you still get a pretty complete set of .NET functionality without that.
So what underlying library are you talking to? I mean, this isn't WinForms, right? I mean, that would be weird.
Right. Yeah, so it's Coco. So let me just tell you, I should just take a step back and talk a little bit about what the development experience is actually like.
Yeah, let's do that, because we understand that. Let's just back up for a second, kind of like have a reset in sense of the whole talk. So Mono itself is an open source implementation of the CLI that allows you to take, you know, write C# and the code that you know how to write now and the libraries you know how to write now, and it'll work on non-Windows systems. Mono VS is the name we're using for the add-in that plugs into Visual Studio and makes it really easy for you to do this in the environment you're comfortable with. Mono Space is the conference that Scott's holding in October. And now we're talking about Mono Touch, which is the ability to compile .NET applications targeting the iPhone. And then maybe you can explain that we're not necessarily doing this in Visual Studio, right?
A quick interjection here. We're often talking about C#, I guess, because that's where we default. But I think it's important to note, too, that VB.NET is in play here as well. And from what I understand,
that's a good point.
People have got Iron Python and Iron Ruby running on the Mono implementation of the runtime as well.
Thank you for keeping me honest. You're absolutely right.
But to take all that back into the context of what I think you were asking, what MonoTouch is, MonoTouch is an SDK and it runs on a Mac, so mm-hmm. that's probably the place to start. With MonoTouch, we've included all the tools, and if you wanted to do iPhone development, with Visual Studio and the command line, your experience would be, fire up Visual Studio maybe in Parallels or whatever and write you some C#, and then mm-hmm. compile it and then switch over to your Mac and use the tools that we provide there. But that's really not the best development experience, and it's not really what we design the experience to be. Okay. So really what most people are going to see and experience when they work with MonoTouch is firing up MonoDevelop on the Mac. And since Scott mentioned it, I probably should interject that MonoDevelop is really, it supports multiple languages, but it really works best with C#. So I while you can do VB, if you have a real need to do that, your best story is going to be C#.
Okay, so you're saying C# is really kind of first among equals in this sense.
Yeah, correct. So C# supported really well in MonoDevelop, and a Visual Studio developer opening up MonoDevelop would be very comfortable with the experience. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have your IntelliSense and project structure very similar to what you're used to. In fact, MonoDevelop supports the same solution and project file formats as Visual Studio, so you could even share code in that manner. But the experience for the iPhone development is that we actually integrate to Apple's Xcode where it makes sense, because there's a lot of functionality that we depend on there.
I see. So you're not trying to necessarily rewrite everything that already works.
Correct. So so your question was, what is the UI? I mean, this isn't WinForms on an iPhone. Clearly, that would be ugly. So what we actually do is we support the interface builder that Apple ships with the iPhone SDK. And Interface Builder is, it's a designer. You would be comfortable with that experience. Mm-hmm. You have a toolbox, and you drag controls onto a form that is at the aspect ratio of an iPhone. So it looks, it looks like you're designing on an iPhone screen. And at the end of that process, you have what you want your UI to look like. And those are several controls that, the way we access them in MonoDevelop is that you name outlets, which is a term from their from their designer world. But basically, you would go through name outlets to correspond to all the controls that you want to have access to, and then you save your designer file, and you go back to MonoDevelop, and it will MonoDevelop detects it detects all the interfaces that you have created from within MonoDevelop. It's kind of hard to describe, but...
No, but it kind of reminds me of model view controller type of a structure, or what we used to call document view back in the day. But the idea that you create your resources in one place, you prepare all of your user interface stuff, and then you go and you do all of your logic, and then you hook them up to each other.
Right. So But, you know, I think the part that I failed to describe is that it's all still very integrated in MonoDevelop. So from within MonoDevelop, you say, I want to add a new interface, and it adds the, you know, .zip file for you, and then you double-click on that, and it's you're going to be pretty comfortable transitioning over to a designer that's running, you know, outside of the MonoDevelop experience, but still in it. And when you save your files, we automatically generate all of the, you know, the partial classes like you would get it with any other designer kind of model, you know, that we're all comfortable with from ASP.NET or WinForms designing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so back in MonoDevelop, you now have everything bound up nicely for you and all of your controls exposed as .NET controls and you know, all the properties exposed within there that you're going to have access to change. And from there, it's a pretty straightforward development process. You could, if you wanted to, you could avoid the interface builder just like you might avoid it in WinForms if you wanted to build all your interfaces out from C#. You would be able to do that. So, and then the next step is, of course, you build it and then you run it. And, you know, like if you get our evaluation version today, it supports all of this that we've discussed so far and all this integration all the way back to the iPhone simulator that Apple ships in the SDK as well. So as soon as you hit run inside of inside MonoDevelop, it's going to fire up the simulator and launch your application for you, and you can interact with it, you know, right there on the screen.
And is there anything that you can't do? I mean, this isn't like a technology prototype, is it? It's not like a oh, look at this kind of thing. It's like, so somebody used to say, it's like, when, you know, sometimes people put together a prototype, it's like a three-legged dog. You know, you know he's going to get where he's going, but it's just hard to watch. Is this a toy, or is this really, can you really write an application in C# on an iPhone that looks like one?
Yeah, this is a product, so it's a little different than, you know, maybe some of the approaches that you know, some of the cool things we've done with Mono in the past. But no, it's, I mean, the entire experience is very streamlined. And like I said, I just described that in the evaluation version, you could develop, you know, you can go get that for free. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't time expire or anything. And you could develop your application against the simulator. What the evaluation version doesn't support is actually deploying to the device. You know, that's the product we sell. So, it supports all of that end to end, and you're paying for it, so you should expect it to work.
You're paying for it, so I mean, it's, well, I mean, that's kind of interesting. I didn't mean to actually do that, but it sounds like I kind of stepped in the, I think I made an indirect comparison against open source software that, like, hey, if it works, great. If it doesn't work, sorry, you know, go figure it out. And you actually emphasized that when you said, well, this is a product. I don't know if I didn't mean to do that, but it almost sounds like we're saying, well, this is a product, so you really can expect it to work really well. But
right.
Both Mono and Mono Touch are things that are in production, and real people are doing real work on these things today, right? I mean, there are apps I can get with Mono Touch that are in the App Store.
You know, I don't know if there are Mono Touch ones on the App Store today because of the length of time for the approval process, and we just launched Mono Touch, like I said, 2 weeks ago, and you know, we had the beta program only running a short time before that because this was actually all a very aggressive production. So within the beta program, we didn't give out the license to build apps for, you know, a go live license like you would be familiar with. So we don't have that, but it's probably worth pointing out a little bit of the history of how Mono Touch came to be, which is that we licensed Mono to various companies for various purposes when they need to have a commercial license of Mono rather than you know, just what's provided by the open source licenses. And in one particular case, a game company called Unity licensed Mono for use in their game engine, which they have for Windows, Mac, the Nintendo Wii, and ultimately the iPhone.
Really? Mono on the Wii?
Correct. Yeah, we actually offer Mono on the Wii. So if there's any you know, any Wii developers out there, you know, give us a call. We can you know, we can hook you up with a Wii port of Mono as well.
Wow, so Scott, we need to have a Mono on the Wii talk at MonoSpace. Get on that.
Are you going to do the talk?
It sounds like I'm going to have to since it's an open space conference.
I think it would be interesting to talk about, you know, whether or not we should have some people have actually talked about doing a game development session at MonoSpace. So the program is still under development, and maybe we'll see that.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of interesting games with Mono. before we go off on the tangent, that might even be the place to go. Let me go ahead and get to the point of the Unity story, which is that Unity licensed Mono for use on the iPhone about a year ago. And so they have a few hundred apps in the App Store that have Mono in it already. So, while we don't have the Mono Touch apps out there, there's plenty of them using Mono and using the technology. And in fact, I actually saw an announcement yesterday that I think 5 of the top 100 apps on the App Store were produced with Unity. So,
wow. And this is the thing, though. If you're doing it right, you're not supposed to know, right? I mean, this has always been the thing. Whenever I use an application and discover that it's running .NET, and I never even thought about it until I kind of stumbled upon it, you know, using some introspective developer tool, I always realized that, oh, okay, good. This is success. You know, whether the application's written in Tickle, or whether it's written in Mono, or whether it's written in, I don't know, Delphi, it doesn't matter. You know, as long as it's a great app, people don't care. I think it's just the developer in us that wants to go into the App Store, search for the word Mono, and then get the list of all of the different applications that are running.
I think you're completely correct. Our goal, and particularly with MonoTouch, is we want an app that looks like it belongs on the iPhone. And that's why we made a lot of the decisions we made. I mean, originally when we announced, when we started talking about Unity, I started getting tons of emails every week that were, how do I get Mono on the iPhone? And the answer was, unless you're producing a game engine, we don't really have a useful port for you. You can go get Unity, and you can make an app that looks like a game. But there's really no story for how do you make an app that looks like an iPhone app. And with MonoTouch, I mean, that's what we did. We bound all the native APIs, or a significant portion of them. And that's why you use their interface builder. So at the end of the day, users shouldn't know.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Joseph and Scott, thanks a lot for giving us kind of an overview of the Mono ecosystem. It sounds like there's a lot of interesting stuff. We didn't even get a chance to talk about Moonlight. The Mono and Silverlight. People can learn all about that at go-mono.com.
Correct. Yeah, that's probably the shortest URL. And they can get Moonlight at go-mono.com/moonlight.
Very cool. And then they can learn about Monospace at monospace.us. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.